from the twisted mind of Wes Anderson.
What's happening now?
I don't know.
I don't like the way that guy looked at us, the alien.
How did he look?
Like we're doomed.
Maybe we are.
I've just informed the president.
How long can they keep us in Asteroid City, legally?
The world will never be the same.
I do a nude scene, you want to see it?
Huh? Did I say yes?
You didn't say anything.
I meant yes, my mouth didn't speak.
Lord. All right, everybody, welcome into the podcast. Today we're going to be talking about the ornate, the immaculate, the quaint and quirky. We're talking about Pamela's wiener. I couldn't think of anything funny. We're going to be talking about Asteroid City by Wes Anderson. You're listening to the
Analysis.
Oh, shit, I thought we were talking Primal Fear.
Yeah, I just saw Primal Fear. Movie rules. I got to give a shout out to the Rewatchables podcast. Have you seen this? Have you heard about this?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's great. It's probably my favorite movie podcast. It's such a great trove of, oh, I haven't seen that. I should check it out and then listen to the podcast. But I don't want to give away the plot to Primal Fear, but I'm really glad I saw Fight Club first. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the dual personality switcheroo. And, you know, it's okay to give away the plot from a movie that came out in 1993. I think if
'96.
Okay.
So 3 years later, he does the same thing. Like, did anyone see that coming?
Well, one was conscious.
The Edward Norton casting?
Yeah, one was a conscious dual personality, and the other was a subconscious dual personality. So it's not the exact same.
Yeah. Bob, where do you stand on Wes Anderson? So this time 2 years ago, 3 years ago, we had the pleasure of chatting with the cinematographer, the man who shot Asteroid City and all other films except Bottle Rocket. That was probably the highlight of the pod. He refused to come back on a second time. But, Robert Yeoman.
Robert Yeoman, yeah. And he's now a professor at USC. So professor of cinematography in probably one of the most famous American film schools. So guy's got a pretty loaded schedule, and I'm sure there's a lot of podcasters out there in Southern California asking him for his time, especially around a Wes Anderson release. But I believe he'll come back on. He's, you know, relative of a friend of the podcast.
But we really snagged him at a great time. Pandemic, everyone's sitting around jerking off. Mm-hmm. And we really tricked him into coming on to our little podcast. But that was real high. I encourage people to check it out. It was before French Dispatch came out, right? It was just kind of in between.
We were waiting with bated breath for French Dispatch.
For one of my least favorite movies. But we'll get to that later. So where do you stand on Wes Anderson? Because you texted me, this is second tier experience. I'm not really a Wes Anderson guy anymore, I think is what you said.
So, by the way, that Robert Yeoman episode was episode 176. If you guys want to go back into our library there and check out the conversation with him, he walks us through a lot of the behind the scenes and the creation of and just what it's like to be on a Wes Anderson film set and the hang and everything. And it just made us super jealous just for the experience of being around a lot of that. Just a lot of cool people drinking wine and having a great time making art. But we're
watching a bunch of cool movies with Wes. One of my favorite parts about the discussion was how he's like, how do you make the pinpoint turns with the camera? Kind of one of the hallmarks of a Wes Anderson movie and like the immaculate framing of everything. Yeah. And he's like, well, I set myself the whip pan. He's like, I set myself up in the finishing position. So I curl myself up to where I'm going to finish. And then so I can kind of spring load it from there, which I thought was really cool.
I follow a bunch of Wes Anderson aesthetic Instagram handles, and one of them is called Wes Anderson Cinematography, and I'm just constantly sharing that episode with them. Like, hey, if you're into this, like we interviewed this guy, but they always show kind of a dual split of, like, for example, Grand Budapest Hotel, and they'll show the actual scene, and then they have footage of Robert up on the dolly with, you know, the whole camera crew and like kind of the shot making of. And so it's just really cool to kind of see the both of those happening at the same time. And it's always cool to see Robert in there because you see him under the hood and you're like, oh, that's our buddy from our podcast.
I would love to see more of that sort of footage. Well, because I guess like accidentally Wes Anderson is an Instagram handle. Like,
yeah, I have a book full of those. Yeah.
Yeah, like this picture book of just Australian hot dog stands, or Austrian, I should say.
But then, yeah, stuff like a desert setting and like a house painted in pastels, and it looks like something that would be part of the Wes Anderson vibe.
Which I find very charming. Obviously, you know, people can get prickly about, they're watering down his vision into, you know, a TikTok sort of... a trend has been to kind of frame up stuff to make it look like Wes Anderson. Like, you know, there's a lot of copycats out there. I mean, you know, it's more than that, but I don't really bristle at the attempt to, the parody is obvious. So it's not like they're way off base.
I guess to go back and answer your question, I may have done it just subconsciously here as you were talking about just where are you at with Wes Anderson? And I'm talking about how I follow multiple Instagram handles that praise him. I've got coffee table books. Like I love his world. I just any time, and there's different levels of affection for different Wes Anderson movies, and I'm sure we'll get into ranking here today. But anytime there's a Wes Anderson movie coming out, to me, it's an event. He's one of the directors that are just an absolute must-see. There's only just a handful of them for me nowadays that are just like, oh, that guy's coming out with a movie. I've got to go see it. And I just...
Tarantino, yep. Scorsese.
Chris Nolan, what? I would say.
Christopher Nolan. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Wes Anderson. I think that might be Wes Anderson. Unless there's directors that have stuff coming out and it's like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah, I'd like to see that Robert Eggers movie or whatever. And I think it's... You can get excited for stuff, but there in terms of like an automatic go to see purchase, it's Wes Anderson's one of a select few.
Yeah, I mean you can make the case for like Spielberg, but less so now, right? I still think Wes Anderson.
I didn't go
like
see what's it called the Feldmans. I can't even remember
the Fablemans.
Right, waiting for the Fablemans. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't go see that, you know. I mean, it's Spielberg, it's exciting, but yeah, I think
he's still Wes Anderson's still a draw. I mean, but he's definitely not winning over any new fans at this point, right? It's like his signature style, we all know what it is. And he's definitely leaned into it more so lately. I mean, what was Life Aquatic kind of the first one? You know, because you think about
when you say first one, what do you mean?
Tenenbaums. Well, the first of sort of these
the commercials.
Dollhouse.
Oh, okay, the dollhouse.
No, we're talking about like, you know, all right, so he starts off with Bottle Rocket, which wasn't even shot by Robert. That's how we got to know the guys, right? And then, you know, Rushmore, and then we get Royal Tenenbaums, everyone considers his best. But then it's like Life Aquatic, and then he gets into the stop motion with Fantastic Mr. Fox. There's Moonrise, there's Grand Budapest. Yeah, it's getting more and more ornate. I think maybe Life Aquatic kicked that off, but I mean, yeah, like I said, he's not really, you know, it's immaculately arranged sort of elements and just increasing cast list of like a Marauder's Row of heavy hitters and big celebrities just all want to show up and say a line of dialogue. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think your mileage may vary on maybe you're exhausted by the form and the style, but. Yeah, I mean, you got to know what you're getting into going in, and it does ebb and flow for me in terms of my enjoyment. For example, Isle of Dogs and French Dispatch were definitely not on the level of Grand Budapest, which I thought was Moonrise Kingdom improved. So it's like Moonrise Kingdom was really charming. My problem is that like some of these movies are hilarious and some are simply amusing. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I know that this is in reference to The New Yorker, and he's turned it into a cute little movie. But let's talk about Asteroid City. What were your initial reactions, coming like walking out?
So, I want to stay positive, and I live in a world of any Wes Anderson is better than no Wes Anderson, and I would still prefer any of his projects to most stuff that comes out today. I was disappointed with this movie and did not enjoy it a ton. I found it very watch checking and very patience testing and very, what a term that we use on here is fart sniffing, in reference to South Park, where they fart in wine glasses and then sniff it. It's very just like nose up in the air type of entertainment. So I didn't enjoy it, but I want to stay positive, and I know you did. So can we talk about all the things you liked, and I can yes and some of them, and then I'll bring in some of the thorns.
Hey man, I mean I kind of loved it. I found it really funny because I was worried. Well, because I was kind of worried that, like I just said, where I thought Grand Budapest is hilarious, but also it has a lot of depth, that and the Ralph Fiennes of it was kind of elevating everything. But then you have the really funny Jeff Goldblum one-liners and the Adrien Brody one-liners, which are just, I found the movie so funny. And then the last two were like, you know, I'm not really laughing out loud. I wasn't able to chart any laughs. Uh-huh. But this one, and I was kind of worried that we get more of it because it's just like a massive list of actor names, and they'd all be standing around and delivering monotone lines of dialogue. But I couldn't help myself. I first of all, like, I was laughing the entire time with the alien comes down in the animation.
That was a little win. Okay.
The wide-eyed, hilariously silly, goofy little stop animation. And then
I just love when he picks up the asteroid and then they go to take a photo and he just poses just for a moment. Like that was the win for me in the movie.
See, it was less amusing and more genuinely hilarious. I thought there's a quote by Forbes where it's like delightfully quirky, genuinely hilarious, profoundly sad. Okay. Now, see, I kind of push back on the profoundly sad stuff because I think what you're getting at is I'll give you that it probably lacks stakes. You know, the movie is about loss and grief, but it's like are we really connecting with these characters who are just kind of sadly talking about how we're profoundly depressed people, but we don't feel the need to show it? I think it's a quote by Scarlett Johansson's character in it. I just thought it was so funny. I was laughing way more than I expected. I mean, the Jeff Goldblum cameo, brilliant. I mean,
that was nice.
Well, we like to spoil the movies. We like to have full, open, and honest discussions. That's why we're, 2 weeks late, giving people a chance
to see
the
analysis
delay.
Everyone knows we're always coming in 2 weeks late.
But him showing up as the guy that played the alien in the play. Uh-huh. So let me start by saying that the nesting doll framing device, I could kind of take or leave, right? So this is a movie about a TV show hosted by Bryan Cranston, your boy.
That was actually Chris Uelman, who is Robert Uelman's nephew. Ted texted me and he said, basically, Bryan Cranston in Asteroid City, are you going to bring your mop and bucket to the theater? Something along the lines of me, going full mess in my pants because of that.
Yeah, it was your load seeping out from under your popcorn.
People were slipping
and
sliding.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Cranston, he's the host of a 50s TV show.
Yeah, he's host of a show which dives into the making of a play. So we see the actors on stage. It's all black and white. Adrien Brody is the director. Edward Norton is the writer of this play. And then everything that's kind of in the world of Asteroid City is the play that they're performing. And that is in full color. Every time we pull back out to that world, I was kind of less excited. Although that's where kind of the meat and bones and the heart of the depth of, the message and the themes. That's where that lies. There's a lot of stuff about Stanislavski and the method and acting schools in there, which got a little meta.
And then there's Marilyn Monroe. I kind of got some My Week with Marilyn vibes a little bit.
Trying to convince this Mercedes, what's her name, actress to come back and do Asteroid City, which is the Scarlett Johansson is an actress playing an actress playing an actress. Mm-hmm. I just loved being in the brightly colorful, gorgeous world of Asteroid City. I found like the three little girls. I thought all the little students, you know, the witches and the zombies and the bearing, and, you know, Tom Hanks shows up to be the fun grandpa guy. It's kind of like a little bit of Moonrise Kingdom vibes with kind of a focus on the young cast. And then just everyone that just popped up, Steve Carell, you know,
he was just doing brick from, he was the motel manager, but yeah, just, he kind of was playing a person of low intelligence, and even the gravel of his voice was giving me kind of the same way that he was doing Brick from Anchorman.
Yeah, no, I think that's, well, he's not quite as dim-witted as, I mean, he's actually, he's a pretty, right, and this guy's a fairly astute businessman running a hotel and selling plots of land and a vending
machine.
But
do you know what I'm saying, where it's kind of like a very, there's, you know, it's just kind of a blank stare, and it's delivered incredibly deadpan, which is obviously onto the style of Wes Anderson, and just even, I just, the way he speaks, it's hard for me to articulate right now, but he kind of speaks with the back of his throat a little more, and it was like, oh, it's like I immediately felt like I was watching kind of a slightly more intelligent Brick, but I digress.
Yeah, no, I could see that. I just, there's little moments where, you know, they're kind of burying the ashes, and he shows up in frame to deliver the tomato juice, but he pauses, he takes his visor off, and that's like in this top left corner, and it's just I just really enjoyed the framing, and I was mesmerized by the color, and kind of just enjoyed being there. I wasn't looking, you know, you could really look for depth and meaning if, yeah, there's just so much going on and so much that's the inspirations and the references, you know, a lot of stuff's beyond guys like me and you, but I mean, I was just kind of, I just enjoyed being there, I guess.
So yes, you're right. It's always visually fun to see a Wes Anderson movie, and it's just the star power that keeps rolling out to basically just have a scene or a few lines. That's always interesting. There was a few sight gags that I appreciated. I think the alien posing with the meteor, like that was the first one. I think the kids' song, when the kids are doing the classroom and that kid decides that he wants to put on a little like Dear Lord Alien bit, that was pretty funny. And then there was a sight gag where they're in the movie, but Cranston steps out, but this time he's in color, and you can see he's wearing a blue suit, and he's like, I'm not supposed to be in this. And then you hear him off camera being like, I'm not in this. So just kind of like that was almost, what's an example where it's so self-referencing, almost like a Bo Burnham thing, or it's just where it's like they're commenting on it's so complicated now, not even the actors know which phase of this movie they're supposed to be in. So,
which is hilarious, yeah, because it's like, are we supposed to believe that the host of the TV show stepped on stage during a scene of the play where, you know, he's not supposed to be involved in the actual events of the play? He's supposed to comment on it because it's supposed to be a documentary, not actually.
But I just think that to me, I took it as it was so self-reflective that it's like we're getting into such a complicated space with the framing of this movie that this guy is lost with not knowing that he stepped onto the movie set with his TV personality. Right. So it was just, that's where I took that. But anyway, either way, it was goofy.
Well, that's kind of the framing device or the theme that I took with it. It's just like, this is just goofy. It's a bunch of people getting together in the desert and having a good time and being silly and goofy. And it doesn't have to be anything.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be. And that's why I said, like, I don't like hate this movie, and any Wes Anderson is better than no Wes Anderson. But for me, there's kind of these two almost subgenres of Wes Anderson that I've started to notice, where you kind of have, and they all involve some of the similar things, like the visuals and the loaded casts. But you have the adventure story, and that's more like a Moonrise Kingdom. It's like a Grand Budapest, and you know we know kind of which Steve Zissou. These are kind of like they're very you know, almost like have action in them. They can be somewhat thrilling from time to time, but there's some sort of like adventure happening. And then you also have the Wes Anderson that is kind of more it's a smaller story, and it involves like deep characters, and you like really invest emotionally in them and the story and their journey. And then you've kind of have like those are the two camps, and I love both equally, and now we're starting to see these kind of like introspective art with a capital A stories, and that's the French Dispatch in this, and it's very expansive. There's a lot happening, and he's really, I think, trusting that cinema heads are going to go watch this multiple times to find new things in it all the time. But on first watch, it really tests your patience, and I don't care about any of these characters. I don't care about hardly any of their journeys. It's performed interestingly, almost to steal a Carl Havoc. Like, I said it would be interesting, right? I didn't say it'd be entertaining, but it's like, I didn't really care. I didn't care about the grieving widow. I didn't care about like his relationship with his father-in-law, like the whole Tom Hanks thing. And Tom Hanks is like Mr. Emotion. Tom Hanks is like, Mr. Heartfelt. And I just thought like all of it was kind of an for me. Like I walked out of the theater really. Like,
yeah.
And I didn't laugh. I chuckled in my mind, I chuckled a little bit at the alien, but I didn't laugh at all. Grand Budapest. Oh, I was really dying. Like that is in a hilarious movie. And like, so anyway, I know they're all going for different things. They're not always supposed to be funny, but I didn't get the heart and I didn't get the comedy. I didn't get any adventure. That's where I'm at.
Yeah, I didn't. That sucks, man. Because I'm kind of with you. I didn't really care about the widower or these two lonely people connecting in a lockdown quarantine.
Yeah,
know,
it's a quarantine really movie. Okay, right.
yeah, exactly. I didn't really feel that emotion either. But I was really, I almost had a smile on my face most of the time. I just kind of got what he was going for.
I thought there'd be more hijinks.
Entertainment. Yeah, but that's, you know, like that the Fantastic Mr. Fox and Moonrise Kingdom of it, where they're on the move and they're moving, you know, up staircases and crossing over on this roof and then down this staircase. But, you know, like we've already seen that. I kind of like that they were just in one place. And
yeah,
I don't know, just kind of, I don't know, hijinks within a confined space. You know, I mean, what was funny about like that police chase that was unexplained.
Yeah, just constantly happening. Yeah, just that was interesting. Nick couldn't figure that out.
I just love the silliness of it. Matt Dillon pops up as a mechanic, completely thankless role.
Yeah, for one little like carburetor bit in the beginning of the movie.
And do you know that Bill Murray was supposed to be the Steve Carell?
I did hear that.
Yeah, he got COVID in Ireland, and then so he had to be recast. And it's such a nightmare of a scheduling because of all the different actors. Uh-huh. So they're like, we have to replace him, and amazingly, Steve Carell was just available.
That's awesome.
Which, what a guy to like come off the bench.
Uh-huh. Yeah, really.
Do you think Tom Hanks was kind of like out of place?
Yeah.
Because I feel like usually...
That could have been Bill Murray, usually and it would have been probably more impactful. Tom Hanks has been on a weird run since Elvis. It's like the Pinocchio movie. You know, this is like, guy's just getting it out of his system. Nah. He'll be back.
Yeah, he's doing whatever he wants. Well, it's like, oh, yeah, I haven't worked with Wes Anderson. But because certain people can just show, you know, we've got the Schwartzmans, the Owen, the Luke Wilsons, you know, like
Adrian Brody's been in so many of them now. Defoe is in there in the actor studio scene a little bit there.
Like he's got his bullpen, right? Uh-huh. Or his staple. And then everyone else is just kind of like, oh, I kind of, that looks really fun. I kind of want a piece of that. Jeff Goldblum is now, you know, almost, you can't have it without him, even if it's this tiny little role.
Yeah.
God, him as the executor.
So good. Mr. Gustav
H. Who is Gustav H? Did he just throw my cat out the window? Yeah, well, what's funny is that, like, so Scarlett Johansson and Tom Hanks kind of knew. I'm sure there's a few other people. You know who was really good is...
talking about the school teacher?
Yeah, Maya Hawke.
Yeah, it's Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman's daughter.
Yeah, Nepo baby. She was great. I think she fit into the world really well, and I could see her being now a staple going forward.
I thought she was serviceable. Really, I mean, I think anyone could have really done what she was doing out there, though. I wasn't super impressed with her.
It's kind of like that camp counselor. Like, she could have been in Moonrise Kingdom as well.
Yeah, right? I could see that. Okay, yeah.
There's a Wes Anderson.
Tilda Swinton's always in this, yeah.
Mm-hmm. She always plays funny, weird characters in these movies. One of my favorite scenes was actually, you know, you talk about like not really getting any drama or heart, and I do kind of agree with that, but I did like the Margot Robbie scene.
I wrote that down. I said, this is a nice scene.
So it's Jason Schwartzman's character pops out of the Asteroid City play to kind of take a break and walks off stage. And then we see that offstage moment where he's connecting with Margot Robbie's character, who is the actress who was supposed to play his wife. And then so they were supposed to have this like the scene between the bereaved husband and his dead wife.
The ghost of his wife.
It's like, as though the ghost, it's not.
And
like
then they do the scene. Like the they actually like work the scene together. Yeah.
Well, she remembers both of their lines. Already been cast, so she's across the alley in another Broadway play going on
that
at the
sucks.
Same time. He's taking a smoke break, and then she, we're supposed to be in a scene together. Got cut. Now I'm in this other thing. The layers of that were kind of like you had to take a minute, but then. He's standing there. He's like, oh, I don't really remember the lines. And she's doing both of them. And it's like, wow, what a great pinch hit role like for Margot Robbie. He's just super cool.
I love her. I really, really appreciate what she's doing with her career. I just think she's awesome and everything.
Just taking swings. I even, and just always.
What was the Babylon? I just thought the movie had some of its issues, but like I think just the lack of praise for what she was doing in Babylon. I thought she was awesome in that. But
it's really unfortunate that people got kind of bogged down in that movie's faults and instead of praising what was great about it. I mean, she's like
maybe
a modern
I'm getting
day,
bogged
what,
down
Catherine Hepburn.
Yeah, 'cause she is. But maybe I'm getting bogged down in the issues with Asteroid City here, because I saw on Esquire they rated this number one in their rankings of Wes Anderson movies.
I am really excited to see it again. And I got to tell you, I mean, I've kind of did my ranking based on rewatchability.
Okay.
Kind of sensing.
Yeah. So give me your ranking, and I'll just kind of tell you whether you're nuts or not.
Well, yeah. So let's start at the bottom. I mean, I've got Isle of Dogs. It was just the least fun for me.
Although I did like the scene where he's making the sushi. Sometimes it pops up on my Instagram of when he's like banging the sushi and like making it, and they're gonna add the poison to it. And I just I watch it all the time on a loop. Like it's mesmerizing to me. So anyway, Isle
of
Dogs.
A lot of these movies are, and like so as a caveat, I think all these movies are really good. I think there's definitely top tier. And then there's kind of a muddled, I like all of these movies. And then there's kind of like the three bottoms. So like Isle of Dogs, Bottle Rocket, first attempt, kind of looks like a student film, perfectly fine. Got them connected with our boy Yeoman. Yeah. And then, so that's
Iota,
a,
trying to
that's
break
a
the
not,
safe.
Sorry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, French Dispatch I have right there as well. They might as well be tied.
A
but
higher on
so
that.
French Dispatch at I had Dispatch at 10, Bottle Rocket at 9. French Dispatch I like solely for the Adrien Brody performance and the art in the cell, that main block. Then going up here, I mean, I have this really low, but it's Royal Tenenbaums is probably considered his best movie. A lot of people have it number one, right?
I love Royal Tenenbaums. Richie losing his shoe and starting to cry. I talk about it all the time. Such a good fit. No, and then Owen Wilson, just a high off his ass, going, Wildcat.
It's great. And it's probably his most professional movie, right? It's before we get into kind of that dollhouse stuff we were talking about. I've recently rediscovered, I consider Darjeeling Limited very underrated. And I have this.
That's towards the bottom for me, but okay, it's a little higher for you.
Well, I think the score is really funny. I think Owen Wilson is one of his funniest Wes Anderson performances. Can we all agree to that? And then Jason Schwartzman, he's in love with the lime girl. There's a lot to like about the movie. I know most people have probably only seen it the once. I've now seen it 3 or 4 times, and it's got one of my favorite scores and some really fun stuff.
Again, very visually stunning.
It's the introduction of Adrien Brody into the cinematic universe, if you want to call it that. Next up, what, 6? Moonrise. I know Moonrise is really high for you. I think because of the next movie is just a perfected version of this. in terms of the beats and the humor. But great Edward Norton performance, his introduction to
one of my world. Favorite Bruce Willis performances.
Yeah, the that's good too. Cop. Who is it? Francis McDormand? Is that the
he's
other? Or is it?
Bill Murray's wife is Francis McDormand.
A lot of great stuff in Moonrise. And then Life Aquatic is probably the one I've seen the most, to be honest. I mean, the Bill Murray-ness of it.
Thank you for not choosing me.
This could easily be a number two. I just watched it the other day. Great finale. That song that plays at the end. Was it Sugar Super uh-huh. Ross or something? Rushmore.
Yeah,
I mean,
Rushmore's awesome.
I haven't rewatched this in a long time, and it didn't really resonate with me when it first came out. I kind of rediscovered it, but like, man, the Bill Murray in this is amazing, and then you know Jason Schwartzman has been
so
in every movie since.
He's fantastic. I just recently rewatched Rushmore with Brecken. Never seen it, and it was a great rewatch, and it holds up for sure. It's really really
one great. One of my favorite lines in the entire canon. It's got to be him, Owen Wilson, at the dinner table, and Schwartzman goes, "Hey, man, nice nurse's uniform. Actually, they're OR scrubs. Oh, are they? I've got Fantastic Mr. Fox at
you
three.
Love Fantastic Mr. Fox. It's great.
It's such a joy. It's just so humorous. A fantastic George Clooney voiceover performance. It's just...
Meryl Streep's in that too. He really
right,
had everybody
yeah.
read his stuff, man. Anybody who's anybody.
Except
for Leo.
Anybody
yeah,
who's anybody.
He'd be great.
Leo in a Wes Anderson movie.
Yeah.
I mean, he's done Tarantino. I mean, yeah, why not? I would love to see him in like a genre thing. He'd be great as like a voicing some character. Mm-hmm. He actually probably would have been good in Isle of Dogs. But yeah, just such a joy to watch that movie. And then Asteroid City, I reserve the right to move this around, but I'm really looking forward to rewatching it. And again, I think it's one of his most masterful cinematography put on display, and kind of the Russian nesting doll complexity of the
he really gets.
I found very interesting.
Since Budapest, he really does do some sort of. It's never just linear getting into a story. There's always some sort of framework or some sort of device that's going to be something that's going to, you know, change the linear storytelling. So anyway,
back and forth between time periods, black and white, color.
Because there was like in Budapest, it was like a guy writing a book about an interview that he did, and then the interview was the movie that you saw. So you kind of had like two or three different mm-hmm. timelines. And then obviously there was the whole French Dispatch, the framework around the news articles, and then now this is like the TV show, and we never just get in and go on the ride from beginning to end.
Yeah. And then that leaves us with, I think, his perfect movie is Grand Budapest. It's just the perfect blend of drama, stakes, great acting across the board, but especially Ralph Fiennes, like we mentioned. Hilarious movie. A lot of drama and depth, and you feel for the characters. It just there's everything that all these other movies mm-hmm. had. Yeah, it's the perfect blend of everything you learn from the movies he made before and since, I guess. I mean,
yeah. I could rewatch it right now for the mm-hmm. 20th time and still really enjoy it. I agree with at least
Budapest. I think I might put it on.
Me and you have some of the other ones, you know, in different orders, and that's fine. I'm a lot higher on Steve Zissou than you seem to be, but I
have top five.
I'll have to come back when I'm ready for Asteroid City and give it another pass and see if it hooks me. But, you know, with that, I definitely rewatch Budapest all the time. And I really love these movies. Like, this is going to be a filmography and a director that I probably come back to for the rest of my life. Like, I could see myself telling my imaginary grandkids, you know, like, oh, you gotta watch the Wes Anderson movies, and you know, just like sitting down, and I hope they still hold up, because they are so specific, and it is such a world built that I don't know if they'll really date themselves the way that other movies do.
No, I think they're timeless, right? It's like their own language, their own humor, like their own rules
mm-hmm.
for, you know, it's just
and it's so unique.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's so unique and like of a time, but not. It's just a complete world building of this Wes Anderson guy who's just obsessed with the ornate and the specific and the quirky and silly. And it's such a, yeah, every single movie is like this unique little universe.
Yeah.
And I think to your point, I think they'll hold up for quite a while.
Yeah. It'll be like the way that people are like, oh, you've got to watch this Billy Wilder movie. Or, you know, it was just such an incredible perspective. And I just think.
You ever seen Chinatown? Oh man.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. And so it's like, that's, I really think that Wes Anderson and like people, there'll be Wes Anderson film schools for in all sorts of liberal arts colleges for many years to come. And yeah, I just feel like I'm part of an experience that I'll remember for a while. So
yeah, I could see this climbing in the rankings for you.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's Asteroid City. Kind of a big couple of weeks coming up here, Bob. We got, you're kind of falling behind. Yeah. Dial Destiny, give that a miss.
Indiana Jones and Euripides didn't do it for you? Anyway, continue.
No, yeah, step into the elevator for a minute. Let's I'll pitch you what not to see.
Give me a little elevator. Give me a what not to see.
Dial of Destiny. It's Indiana Jones is a PS5 game and he travels through time.
Okay. Indiana Jones meets Bill and Ted. That's exactly what we need, everybody.
Yeah, and this was more bogus journey than excellent adventure.
Does he pass his history exam at the end? I'm Indiana Jones and I got this big test coming up.
I've got to grade a bunch of papers. It actually really focuses on his teaching career. It's most of the movie. But we got Dead Reckoning Part 1, followed by Oppenheimer, followed by Barbie. You going to be seeing any of these movies? Are we
going to
be able
definitely going to see Oppenheimer and Barbie. Dead Reckoning, I'll see just because, you know, someone's got to clean up your mess after you leave the theater.
Dude.
Slipping and sliding.
IMAX, 70mm.
I actually have an IMAX 4D close to me now. So look out. I won't be 3 weeks behind on everything.
What's hilarious about Dead Reckoning and Dial of Destiny is that they both contain train sequences with a chase atop a train car. One is done practically, and one is an old man digitally youthened.
Is it just his floating head on top of like a video game body?
Looks completely ridiculous. Meanwhile,
80 years old.
Yeah, I'm looking at featurettes of Tom Cruise really doing it. And it looks incredible. Super. They had to build the train so they could smash it. Looks awesome. Everything about the movie looks so cool. I'm so excited to see it. That's in 1 week. Oppenheimer actually detonated a nuclear weapon for the filming, which is ridiculous.
Wow.
And then Greta Gerwig. I mean, I'm always down to see her stuff.
Barbie. Those come out on the same day, so I'll probably split those up and we'll see Oppenheimer first and then come back and see Barbie the next week. But
you also
I'm
haven't
really
seen
excited, it seems.
You also haven't seen Across the Spider-Verse? You're not no interest?
It's a kind of stream. I'll be all right. Do a little stream.
Beautiful movie. Really amazing animation. It's going to be a cool summer, though. I think there's finally some good
stuff. Yeah, it's actually, I was not this excited for any of those movies you just laid out. I would have been my number one to see last summer after they did Top Gun. So it's pretty loaded. At least we get a nice little ride here for the next couple months. But I think we'll leave it there. What do you say?
Yeah, I think that's good. All right, man. Nice chatting with you.
Well, it was great chatting with you, buddy. And thank you guys all for listening. Don't forget to smash the subscribe button. Make sure to treat each other with respect. And we'll see you down the road. San Fernando. If you miss this one, you'll